In the last like 4 or 5 years, I have really leaned into just listening and trying to understand my impact, good and bad. And believe me, I just screw up all the time. And, you know, I've been just trying to be aware of it, you know, just trying to be aware of it. And all, again, meeting those conversations with an open heart as well, of really listening to people when they tell you something. And sometimes you have to go like, no, I totally hear you. I understand you, but you're not seeing the big picture, or you're not seeing this or that. But I've really tried to live in sort of a gray area of listening and not being so certain. I think I was very certain way too many times in my career.
Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, brought to you by Cartavera, the leadership development ecosystem that helps you grow your people, grow your business, and grow your life. Also excited to share with you that we are now a part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and we are so looking forward to spreading the message, spreading the impact, spreading the leadership wisdom throughout the podcast network with Evergreen. Today we have a wow guest. David Baldwin is with us, coming to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. His company is called Baldwin And. And if you want to hear about values and building culture and purpose and what he calls using business as a force for good, you have come to the right place today. David has been living this and walking the talk of having clear values, clear purpose and why, and making a difference in business, not just focusing on making a profit. And as he'll share with you, what he's discovered, which we've all known for so long, is when you get the people side right, and when you get the values right, and when you get the why right, and you live them consistently, you will grow, you will be profitable. But the profit is the outcome of the values and the culture, not the focus. There's so many great ideas that David's going to share with you today about ways to lead and to build these really meaningful cultures. It will be a transformational experience for you in your leadership, in your culture, and your business. Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, where we explore leadership, business, and personal growth to help you grow your business and live a richer life. We're your hosts, Jeff Dischwitz
and Craig Matthews. We believe that leaders have to put their people first. And if you don't have time to grow your people, then you're not leading.
Get ready for conversations that will challenge your thinking and help you transform your leadership and your business.
Welcome to your bigger business and bigger life.
We are excited to be back here today. I know we've got a fascinating guest. I had a chance to connect with David Baldwin probably 2 or 3 months ago. I know it was this summer. Just had a wonderful conversation. It was sort of everything from A to Z. And you'll find out quickly what's coming when you just hear a little bit about David's background. It's funny, on his bio, he opens with lead guitar, which I love. So lead guitar, he founded a company called Baldwin And. And the symbol is Baldwin ampersand. That's the name of the company. Right there, it tells you. This is somebody who's got a unique way of seeing the world. So Baldwin And, David is one of the most awarded copywriters, creative directors working in the advertising business today. He's been named Small Business Agency of the Year twice in his first 5 years by Ad Age and the 4 A's. He's former chairman of the One Club in New York City, was an executive producer for an Emmy-winning film called Art and Copy, associate producer for an Emmy Peabody Award-winning film, The Loving Story. His advertising work has been recognized pretty much on every platform that exists, every show. Not only does he have Baldwin And, he co-founded a company called Ponysaurus Brewing in Durham, North Carolina. He's the author of a bestseller called The Belief Economy, How to Give a Damn, Stop Selling, and Create Buy-In. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. This last year, in the wake of the George Floyd tragedy, David co-founded an organization called Take Your Seat, which is a company dedicated to getting more Black representation into the boardrooms of America. So welcome, David.
Thanks. It's so good to be here. That's a crazy piece of paper.
So I'm just going to start with, give us a little bit of your background story, David.
Sure. Yeah. So I knew very early on I wanted to be a creative person and that I wanted to make a living on my wits. And And so I was a musician, and also my mother was a media director at an ad agency when I was a kid. So I grew up around advertising, and I grew up wanting to be a musician. And so I ended up inverting the two and deciding that I was going to make a living at advertising and then have music just be fun. So, you know, after all the sort of hoopla of everything, I'm at the end of the day, I'm just a copywriter. You know, I often joke that I'm the CEO and junior copywriter at Baldwin Ann, but lead guitar is a lot of the idea of lead guitar is a lot of what I think I'm about, which is being part of a band. You know, a lot of companies say they're a family, and I go, no, you can't really fire your dad. You know, like you can't fire your family. We're not a family, but we are an organization, and we do, you know, I love the analogy of sort of a band. And if either of you are musicians or have been in bands, you know that you rely on each other. Someone can't outplay or overplay the other people. You got to help, y'all got to help carry the equipment and set up and tear down. And it's a very collaborative language based conversation that you're always trying to have as a musician. And I love that analogy and sort of building a company, because you know, it's every once in a while I'd step forward and take a guitar solo, but I'm just one of the band. I'm another member of the band. And I, you know, I love that culturally. Our culture is give a damn, which you can see over my shoulder. And that's just who we are, you know, that's how I've treated everything, as an opportunity to use sort of my craft to be creative and try to add something to the world versus subtract from it, you know.
Love that analogy, David. I'm a drummer, and I'm just learning to play guitar now.
Yeah.
And I have played in bands, you know, as a drummer, and it is one of these things where you have the personality conflicts, you know, maybe behind the scenes and things like that. But when you come to play, when you get on stage and you're there, you're all together, you're all bought in. And, you know, that's the way it makes the performance work.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, there's this great joke about golf that I'll put into guitar playing, which is one of my favorite golf jokes is, you know, the difference between brain surgery and golf. You can learn brain surgery. I feel like guitar is the same way. It's a never ending journey of, oh shit, I can't do that, you know?
Yeah, but it's fun. I mean,
it's the best.
Make a sound. Same thing with golf. Jeff and I enjoy playing golf too.
A lifelong journey for sure. Yeah,
that's right.
So I'm going to start a little, for some people would say out of order, but I like starting at the end or nearer the end. So when we first talked, one thing that struck me, David, you shared with me about Take Your Seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about that organization and where that all came from.
Well, you know, after the Breonna Taylor and George Floyd incidents, I just for you know, I'm a pretty woke dude. I'm a pretty left of center guy, but I feel like I've always been a supporter and all that. But I really woke up white the next morning and went, okay, what can I do? What can I actually do in this thing as kind of a 50 plus year old dude, white guy, who has worked really hard for the things I've gotten, but realizes that there's a lot of privilege in there too. What can I do? And so my own people were like, hey, we really want you to write a statement. You know, can you put a statement out? Everyone was putting out statements. And I was like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. I mean, right. You know, like what? Sure. So, but I ended up writing one, and I wrote one for my own. I really wrote one for my own organizations, you know, and I believed it. But what I said in the statement was, nobody wants to hear what we have to say. People want to hear. They want to see what we do, yes. And what actions can we take. And so we, on the advertising side, we said, look, let's treat it like a job. Like what? Let's create a strategy and let's see all the things that we can do as an agency to affect change in our little corner of the world. Like if everybody just tried to affect change for the better in their little corner of the world, like we'd have a better world. So we did a bunch of things. And one of them was we put some strategy behind defund the police, which is the worst marketing I've ever heard in my life. You know, it's just it's a cudgel from which the people that, you know, don't believe in the movement want to like hit you on the head with. So we did some work there. And one of the things that I'm part of the board of the One Club, which is it's kind of like the Oscars. Do you guys know what the One Club is?
No.
It's kind of the Oscars of advertising. So the One Club is, think of it as the Academy, and the One Show is kind of the Oscars. It's one of the biggest shows, advertising shows in the world. And it's a very prestigious thing. And I've been on the board for 20 years. I was the chairman for 5 years. And then I got off and they asked me back on. And it's like being in the Senate. Like once you, you know, once you're voted in, you can't get voted out. You know? And so
do you have a security force following?
Yeah,
around?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So the CEO, Kevin Swanepoel, called me one day and just said, "Hey man, look, did you know that if you resign your seat to make room for a black executive, it doesn't have to go through any of the sort of voting and nominating and all that stuff, which it, this person could have, would have passed anyway, but it's like, you can just name your successor. And would you be willing to do that?" And I said, "Hell yeah, I would be willing to do that." And so I nominated a black executive named Sherina Florence, who is super talented. And she's the one of the creative directors at 72 and Sunny in New York. I've known her for a long time. She's just kick-ass creative person. So now she's on the board. And I felt like, you know, I had just read How to Be an Anti-Racist, and just the idea kind of don't just support, get out of the way and or make room and or create opportunities for people. Yeah. And so that's essentially what that was. And I kind of came back and said, that was so easy. That was such an easy way to sort of make change. And so I came back and I was saying to my, you know, Alexis Ohanian had just done something similar, and he put a video out on Instagram saying, "Hey, I'm doing this for my daughter." And I was like, "Well, I'm going to put a video out and I'm just going to challenge all my C-suite friends to do the same thing." And one of my creative directors, Emily Watson, said, "Why don't we use the hashtag take your seat?" Hmm. And I was like, "Why don't we create a company called Take Your Seat?" And that's literally how it happened. And so we incorporated it and created a visual identity and started making plans for this kind of a strategy for how to get it out there, and starting to, we thought we would start with the advertising community first. But then I went to an ex-client of mine, John Replogle from, he was my client at Burt's Bees, and then he went to Seventh Generation, and we were working with them a little bit. But John's a longtime friend, and he's got a VC company here, a private equity company called One Better Ventures. And I went to him and I said, "Hey, this is what we're doing. Would you be interested in being a part of it or funding it?" And he was like, "You're not going to believe this, but we've been having the exact same conversation." And so so it was like, "But you have a name and a logo, so let's go with yours." and so we went, and we started this organization called Take Your Seat. And the first thing we did was hired a black CEO, a woman named Jerusha Stewart, who's awesome. And what we're doing is converting it into a black owned and led company. So I'm trying to make what started out as all white guys on a Zoom, white squares, into very small squares in the corner of the screen, which is what we've been up to. And it's turned into it's a community of really stellar black executives and allies that are trying to change the makeup of the boardrooms of America to better reflect America. So
nice.
So David, one thing I want to ask you about, because when we talked, you shared this with me, that originally that idea had a different name in your head.
Correct.
Right? Which was Take My Seat.
Exactly right.
Can you talk about how that shifted? Because I think that's an important element.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So yeah, the original hashtag was Take My Seat. That's right. So the original hashtag was Take My Seat. We incorporated as Take My Seat. And then as we were interacting with lots of black executives, they're like, can I comment on the name? And I'm like, sure. And they were like, that's a little bit white patronage. And it's a little bit, it's feeling a little bit, it feels a little patronizing. And so we changed the name. Yeah, that's right. Thank you for reminding me.
Well, no, I think that's important, because to me, it spoke, when you first told me that, it spoke to the listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listening versus trying to figure it out yourself. And that just really struck me as it's a little thing, but I guess in many cases that wouldn't have happened.
Well, one of the things that I started every conversation with, I mean, every conversation with any black executive was, I want to start this off by saying I might be helping wrong, and I would like you to help me figure out how to not help wrong.
That is a fantastic way to start a conversation.
I love that. I might be helping wrong.
Yeah, because I was aware that we all have our blind spots, right?
Yes, totally.
And take my seat was one of the blind spots. So, and there have been many, So it's been an amazing experience for that. But I still say that all the time.
Would you find that when you do say that, their eyes light up, or, you know, there's a shift in the energy?
I think, yeah, probably more of a relief of, okay, someone, yeah, to your point, someone's going to actually listen. You know, this has been one of the most amazing things about this entire journey has just been the learning. That's been the most amazing thing for me. I mean, it's been incredible. It's been an incredible learning journey. Yeah. So
it's been a very interesting year and a half.
Boy, has it. Yeah. It's been, you know, it's funny. It's been incredibly productive. It's been a really productive 2 years for me. And, and I, you know, one of the things that it sounds horrible. It sounds so stupid, but I just always say to myself, try to meet this moment with an open heart, like try to meet the moment with an open heart, you know?
That's a great.
And that's what I did very early on when we went into quarantine before any of the other stuff was going down. I was like, all right, this is super anxiety ridden, crazy time. Just meet it with an open heart and try to be a solution or be in service to someone or something. That's it, you know? And that was the whole sort of orientation that I tried to put myself into every time I did anything. So, because, you know, we have clients at Baldwin and who are freaking out, you know, like their business, they've got businesses that they're running. And so we're there to help them with their business. So I called them all and just said, what can we do? How can we help? What are things that we'll do things for nothing? Like, what do you need from us? You know? Yeah. And I think it's just the only way to sort of be, but it's turned into this really productive, amazing experience.
Wow. Well, you've already highlighted a couple things we talk about regularly around leadership. You've talked about service, helping, and listening.
Yeah.
And those get thrown around. But if you were to say generally, is that what we generally see in leadership? I would say no.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
A lot of talk.
I like to say when people say, how many people work at your company? I go, well, I work for 25 people, you know, so, because I kind of do. I mean, you really do. I mean, you're there to set vision and values and all that. But at the end of the day, you're there to help everybody, you know, you're there to help people succeed. So,
well, and with taking
super douchey saying all this, but,
but it needs to be heard. And true. I love when you were talking about when you were starting, take your seat or even before that, and you did the so-called statement.
Yeah.
The key part I heard in that was nobody cares what we say. They care what we do.
Yeah.
And that's such a simple shift.
Yeah.
But often ignored.
Yeah. It's all about actions, man. It's all about actions. Everything is.
Now, I do wonder in the conversation that you have, when you say I may be helping wrong, is helping even the right word? I'm just wondering if it's
a great question.
Is that demeaning at all?
It's a great question. Yeah. I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah, interesting. Interesting, well, interesting distinction.
Well, and I think one of the things I've taken away from this is to do my best to pay attention to that question and understand I still probably don't know the right answer. Yeah. And that answer may change by different people, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. That in this area, in this space, to me, it's not about a right answer because there may never be there's probably not a right answer in the narrow space, but on a macro level, there's a right answer of what do I believe in? What am I going to stand for? What am I going to put into action?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Great starting point.
So you have, there's so much here, David. You've had an interesting journey. I know we're going to talk a lot about Baldwin End and the nature of building companies, but you co-founded this, a brewing company.
Yeah.
Ponysaurus.
Yeah.
Which I think is just in the last few years, isn't it?
2013.
Okay. So 7-8 years ago, talk about where that came from and how your philosophies, like why that business, why that model?
Well, it's really interesting because part, I have to go back to Baldwin and before I talk about Ponysaurus, because we always said that 30% of our revenue was going to come from our own creations and our own clients. And so we went into starting the agency as creating our own IP that we would then turn into revenue, you know, streams. And we failed spectacularly at some things. And we certainly have not turned it into 30% revenue into the agency like we thought we would. But again, a total learning journey of what you will find if you look into the ad world is everyone kind of talks about this stuff. Like we create brands, we create, you know, it's like, yeah, do you? and also like what you find is a lot of them are sort of little house brands that, you know, there's a, you know, we created this chocolate brand and you're like, it's just sold on the 9th floor, you know? And, you know, Adweek or Ad Age about 5 years ago was doing stories on agencies with beers, with breweries. And so they asked us, they said, hey, we hear you guys have a beer. And I was like, yeah, we do, you know? So they said, well, send us the info. And I sent pictures of the brewery and, you know, we have a 3000 barrel capacity brewery in Durham. And the reporter was like, oh, you have a brewery. And I was like, well, yeah, isn't that what you asked? And she said, no, like I'm talking to like a team at McCann that home brews and does prints the labels off at the printer. And I'm like, oh no, this is a like we're in three states. You know what I mean? And so
real company.
It's a company. Yeah, it's a company. And one of the, again, talk about learning. One of the things that I learned was you've got to, you know, we incubated that out of the agency, but out of the agency is the most key thing in the world. Like we incubated it with a company in Durham called The Cookery, which Craig, you might be aware of those guys. Yeah. But we co-own the brewery with them. Mm. And they did all the operations stuff and we did all the branding and design and all that. And you have to get it into its own thing, because if it just lives in the agency as like a little thing that doesn't make money, it's never going to get any attention paid to it, you know? So, but again, like when we started, the brewery, the three original founders and I sat down and said, well, before we make a drop of beer, what do we want this to be? And we decided that we wanted to build community, that we didn't want to just make beer. We want to build community. And that to this day is our belief system. Like that's our kind of belief. So.
When you say you want to build community, are you talking about internally, externally, both?
Yes, everything. So okay. The idea is how do you build community? And, you know, think about what is at the essence of drinking beer. It's getting together with somebody. If you're drinking alone, I can't help you. That's sad. But if you're getting together with people, it's about sharing experiences, stories, getting together, talking, understanding each other, creating empathy. That's what beer is. You know, beer is a way to bring people together. And so we thought like, all right, well, how do we create that experience in our building, in our block, in our ward, in our district, in our city, in our state, in our country? And so everything we do is designed around that. Everything. It all comes out of building community. And again, that is what we talk about, is we don't just make beer, we build community. So like when HB2 happened, you know, HB2, the bathroom bill that happened a few years ago, when you have a statement that says, hey, we don't just make beer, we build community, you got to do something. So when that happened, we did a collaboration with, at the time, Mystic Brewing Company. And we created a beer called Don't Be Mean to People that raised money for the LGBTQ community. And it ended up turning into a fall festival. It ended up turning in, you know, we did it in Charleston 2 years ago, and then it didn't happen last year because of COVID. Probably won't happen this year because of COVID. But it's just amazing how when you just put an idea into the universe and the universe tells you whether it's a good idea, you know. So we had this little sub-brand that we created called Don't Be Mean to People that's still raising money for LGBT, you know, kids. And we support a camp called Chords, which is a camp for queer kids to go be around themselves, you know, with other like-minded kids where they're not, where they can feel safe. We've been supporting that for a long time. So
is Chords a tie back to the musical side?
No, it's Chords with a Q.
Oh.
So yeah, but it's a camp for queer kids. It's awesome. And it supports them and helps them sort of be around them, you know, there are others like them so that they don't feel like others, you know.
Right.
But and some other things too. We raised money. We've raised like $90,000 for lots of different things. So but again, it's inevitable. You have to do that. If you're leading with your values and your values say that we're going to build community, then you got to support community no matter what it is. And the truth is we want to preach to the congregation, not just the choir. So that's a conversation we're willing to have with anybody. And we want to drive that empathy for everybody. Like, you know, it's no secret that all you have to do is know somebody trans, for instance, and your opinion on trans people will change. It's when you don't know them or you don't have any sort of experience with them that you, you know, feel like they're other, you know? So. Yeah.
Well, David, I'm glad you brought that word into it, because all you were doing was talking values without using it. Mm-hmm. And because you said, well, we had this idea, but I would say you had more than idea. You had an idea, but you had a clear why.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you had a commitment to walk the why.
Yeah.
I want to stand up and cheer, because so many leaders, so many organizations talk about values, but it's like, it's your skeletal system. It's in the bones and in the blood of you and everything you do, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's really important to me, and it's really important to the people that I've hired. And because you hire them, they hold you accountable to it, you know, which is, I think, really important to like put yourself on the line and make them call you out when you don't, you know, which we all do. I mean,
not everybody's open to being called out.
Yeah. I think more people are than maybe, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. Some considerable risk.
You know, it's hard, you're
challenging my authority here.
It's hard to cast aspersions. I don't know. I only know what I'm sure. Sort of pathologically stuck with, which is this.
There's a phrase you shared before we got on and even before we got this going. Using business as a force for good.
Yeah.
Talk about that mindset and the ways that has infiltrated your businesses and your life.
Yeah. So I feel like your values can be, I want to make a shitload of money, and that's fine with me. Like I'm not saying I don't want to make money. I'm just saying that's fine. Like if you have that kind of the silent hand of the markets will, you know, is the only thing that matters, and profits and growth are the only thing that matters. That's fine for you. That's not fine for me. That's not how I'm wired, but I'm not going to judge you for it. But that said, I think business has a real part to play in making things better for the world. And we all have kids. You know, I said in my book, like, you know, when you walk in in the morning to whatever your job is, you don't stop being a human being. You know,
so, well, Jeff, he's talking our language here,
but it's true, you know? And so people that work at companies that are doing evil things like that, you gotta look yourself in the mirror. You know, you've got kids, you've got somebody that's promoting GMO, like things that are bad for the world. Like you've got kids, what are you doing? But that said, like I'm part of the B Corp movement. We're a B Corp. Yep. The agency's a B Corp. Take your seat as B Corp pending. And do you guys know what B Corps are?
Yep. I do. Yeah.
You might want to explain it for guests or for,
B Corps are literally like business as a force for good. So the idea of B Corp is you have to apply to this move. It's a movement, and there's over almost 4,000 companies now. It's 3,700 companies or something that are B Corps, including like Danone is like one, like big companies now are becoming B Corps, and Unilever has a bunch of brands within it that are B Corps. But it is a way of sort of living in the world where you're trying to be additive and not subtractive and not living in a zero sum game. And so from an advertising and design standpoint, we're always the things that we do as a company and the kind of clients that we work with, we're always trying to bring that sort of solution to the world. But we also believe there's a tremendous amount of growth in it. And this is Michael Porter from the Harvard professor.
Yeah.
Michael Porter's idea of shared value, which is that what business does is solves problems. And so why not have business solve these problems? Because business can do it at scale. And if it's a good idea, it'll happen like crazy and it'll happen overnight.
Yeah. And then you don't also get into the whole issues of what happens with government funding and right. Everything else that goes into it.
Right. But, it all has its place. NGOs have their place and churches have their place. But business has its place. And this idea that business should just be focused on profits, to me, I think is a sickness, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that because there's, I'm writing, well, it's in the process of editing, but my next book, I have a chapter on creating cultures of safety and psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And I go beyond that. And I think it's crazy talk to most people. What I suggest is that organizations, businesses can not only create cultures where people's lives don't get worse at work, they actually can be part of the solution to some of the mental health crisis.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I love that.
That they can be, you know, if you look at people, they spend the majority of their waking hours working. Larger percentage of their waking hours are working. And if that's just a neutral outcome to what their life is like, that just to me is a complete missed opportunity.
Yes.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have said, come on, Jeff, it's going to solve the mental health crisis. It'll put a ding in it.
Yeah.
Put a ding in the universe.
If we have people that care, or as to your point, David, who give a damn, then we're going to actually make some changes.
Yeah. And also it has a part to play, right? I mean, I think there's this zero sum again, I'm going to use that phrase again of, well, it's not going to fix everything. So it's stupid. You know, it's like, what's his name at, what's the place in Seattle, Dan, what's his name, who at the payment company that made everybody got a $70,000 minimum salary. And he said, I will never make more than what X percent more than any employee. And he got roundly mocked and called a communist and all this stuff. Now, meanwhile, this is a guy who owns his own business, who's making a private business decision being called a communist. But which is the one of the most amazing things now is sort of those socialist radical label that gets thrown around to people that are capitalists. It makes me laugh. But he built an organization that now is growing like crazy. Like he's grown X, what, you know, 5X since that happened. And his employees are super happy. And, you know, there have been a number of studies that have shown that if you create a meaningful culture and you're values led and values driven, and you have your company is based on a purpose, that you outperform the market, significantly. So this is not theory anymore.
So what would you say to the people who would say, you know, Dave, that sounds all good, but when I spend all that time and money developing my people, or, you know, caring or giving back to the community, you know, I can't run a business that way. I'm just going to go out of business if I do that.
I think they're missing that will make their business more successful, right? Yeah. I mean, I do want to clarify one thing. I said, like, business shouldn't be just solely for profit. Business needs to be for profit in order to sustain the business. Right. So I'm not saying you don't be profitable, and I'm not saying don't. I'm a capitalist guy in advertising, and I sell things for a living. I'm basically a salesman, you know, but I just think there's a way to do it. There's a way to go about it, you know, that's got a valence to it. That's not just greed, you know?
So does that impact the clients that you choose to work with?
Big time. Okay. Yeah. We just got approached by, I don't want to say who, cause it wouldn't be sure. Nice, but we just got approached by somebody who we just said, you know, F no, no way. Yeah. And it was a lot of money. And I'm not saying they would have given us the business, but they wanted us to compete for the business. And we were just like, I was just like, those people could write a $5 million check to me and hand it to me, and I would tear it up in front of their face. So yeah, no way.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cartavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
Welcome back.
So David, how old is your agency?
11 years old.
So 11 years, and you're talking about this great story of values-based and purpose-driven, but I also got to believe there's been obstacles to that.
Oh, yeah.
So what are some of the obstacles you've faced at building that kind of business and having that culture, and what have you done to navigate those obstacles?
Well, I don't think those have been our obstacles. I think our obstacles have been more, we are not focused solely on growth, and our industry doesn't recognize that as success. We're not solely focused on winning awards, and our industry doesn't necessarily look at that as success. What we are trying to do is create a sustainable, awesome business that people love to work at and that does great work. And so we've been 25 people now for a long time, and it's a lot of the same 25 people, you know, and we've got six open positions right now. We're looking, but we have never been what I have no judgment on of, man, we got to grow. We got to get big. We got to turn into a 100-person agency and a 200-person. There's an old like saying back in the days. I think it was back in the days when like Shiat Day was the king. And I think it was Jay Shiat or Lee Clow said, we're going to see how big we can get before we get bad. And I've just never had that desire. Like I would just much rather do the work that I want to do, get paid fairly for it, have a great life, you know. I also am a big fan of work-life balance, but I have a definition of work-life balance that I think is different than we've had people who have heard me talk about work-life balance and they'll send me an email and go like, yeah, I don't want to work either. And I'm like, that's not what work, you know, you're like, oh, you think we're a retirement community. We work really hard, you know, but to me, work-life balance is wherever you are, you are. Like wherever you are, be there 100%.
Yeah.
So when you're at home, be at home. When you're at work, be at work. When you're at work and you're not working, leave. You know, so you know what I mean? Like go enjoy your life. Like, but when you, you know, so we work late nights and we do things, but we also, you know, we're the first we're the first company to look at one of our employees who's been killing it and go like, take a couple of days off, man. You gotta go home, you know? Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're with your kids, be with your kids, like really be fully with your kids, you know, be with your wife. So
it's amazing what a gift that is.
Yeah. So and my head of strategy really schooled me to talk about listening. We were talking about creating an organization that respected like the working mothers. Mm. And this is like 5 years ago. And she said, no, working parents. It needs to be working parents, because if you don't support both parents, it doesn't work for the working mother. Mm-hmm. If the working mother has this awesome support and the father doesn't, the working mother is equally as screwed in a different way, you know?
Wow.
And same with the father. Like, so we need to be for life, work-life balance for everybody, you know? And I thought that was, again, like just such a great lesson, you know?
Yeah.
So David, I love your definition about be where you are.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as people come into your organization, do you talk to them about work-life balance and how do you actually explain it to them? Because I think the challenge is people want to put it in a box of this is exactly what it looks like. Like this is a work-life schedule.
Yeah, people think.
How do you talk to people about it?
Yeah, people think work-life balance is I come in at 9 and I leave at 5, no matter what. And that's not necessarily. I mean, I probably could be. Yeah. You know, we just talk about that we're an organization that doesn't watch the clock. We don't. You know, we don't. We value output and accountability. That's what we talk about. So I don't know that we have the work-life balance conversation as an official work. I'd have to go look in my handbook, my employee handbook, to see if it's in there in that way. But we make it really clear that we're about accountability. And so I always say there really is only one unforgivable sin at the agency, and that's not showing up. Like that's not showing up on time. That's not doing what you said you would do. Like if you don't have that integrity, you're just going to make it hard for everybody. So you're going to fail. You know, and once you make someone else's life hard, you're not respecting their work-life balance. You know, you're not respecting what they're up to. And so we talk about it that way.
Well, you've talked earlier, you used a great phrase. You talked about something where you had failed spectacularly.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So you sound like a person who embraces failure as a learning opportunity.
So. I'm weird in that I don't mind being nervous. And I've learned that the interesting things are always on the other side of like, oh, that's scary.
Of discomfort. Yeah.
There's always something interesting on the other side and often success. And so we have this thing that we will say, my partner, Bob, who I originally started the company with, would say like, lean into fear. Like we'll be looking at ideas and the scary one, we're like, that scares the shit out of me. Let's talk about it. You know, that's good, but safe. Like, let's talk about that one, you know? And then we'll go off and try to do it. And it might be scary because there's no money. It might be scary because it's going to be hard to pull off. It might be scary because it's got a cultural meaning to it or whatever. But I'm very comfortable in that. And I have to sometimes remind myself that a lot of clients are not. Boy, you know, nice. And that's been a big thing for me of like, we weren't trying to do this crazy thing. And they're like, you're going to ruin my life, you know? And so I've had to kind of learn there as well.
Well, how have you done, that's a great point. How have you managed that in your leadership internally? Because I'm a person who's very comfortable with discomfort and chaos even.
Yeah.
And what I learned is that I was creating chaos for others because of my normalcy of it. And so I needed to have more empathy, frankly, and see it from their side. So how have you done that in your leadership, especially at Baldwin Amp?
I've in the last like 4 or 5 years, I have really leaned into just listening and trying to understand my impact, good and bad. And believe me, I just screw up all the time. And, you know, I've been just trying to be aware of it, you know, just trying to be aware of it. And all, again, meeting those conversations with an open heart as well, of really listening to people when they tell you something. And sometimes you have to go like, no, I totally hear you. I understand you, but you're not seeing the big picture, or you're not seeing this or that. But I've really tried to live in sort of a gray area of listening and not being so certain. I think I was very certain way too many times in my career, super certain, you know, about things, and then turned out to be wrong, you know? So, and I had all the evidence to back it up, and all, and you end up creating chaos, you know? So
that's an interesting one, because I think it was just last week I did one of my daily videos, and the suggestion was to actually assume that I'm wrong in scenarios.
Yeah.
Not just be open to the possibility, but actually assume I'm wrong.
That's really interesting.
In order to see past the blind spots, even if I don't know what the blind spots are.
Yeah.
It feels radical, but the more I do it, it feels like it opens me up. Talk to whatever's about in front of me.
How does that manifest itself for you? Like, how does that work?
It's sort of like a mental reminder I have to use. Typically, it's going to be for anything where I start to feel the urge, like to be right or to convince or persuade, or to just say, I know what this is or what it needs to be. I can sense that. And that's just, it's a new muscle I'm exercising. Say, let's assume I'm wrong right now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try
that. Oh, well, if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to look at this very differently. But if I assume I'm right, I'm not going to look at the whole thing. I just won't.
For sure. Yeah. So. Yeah. I think being right is one of the worst things I've experienced in my entire career, from both the payoff of it from other people and me, you know, and me doing it and just being right. Like, you know, you're right. And it's like, well, maybe you're not right, to your point. I mean, I definitely have dealt with a lot of employees who are superstars who think they're right. And the analogy that I've used over and over again, and it's probably wearing a little bit thin because it's an old one now, but I used to always say, do you want to be Terrell Owens or do you want to be Jerry Rice? You know, they're both great receivers. They both have all the skills. One of them tears locker rooms apart and the other wins championships, you know? And why is that? Because it's all about Terrell Owens. Like, Terrell Owens was always only about Terrell Owens. That's all he cared about. He had a statue of himself when you walked in the house, supposedly. You know? So, and so
Jeff has one of those too, but you know, that's
probably
it's small.
It's in a snow globe.
but I think it's a good analogy of like, are you about the sort of team and winning, or are you about, you're right? You know, are you about, it's all about me? So,
well, I think the risk there of always being right or choose or wanting to be right is that we're playing the short game. We're playing to win versus playing for the long game, where relationships matter and the culture around us matters. And
one of my biggest challenges that I've seen, and it's been pointed out to me many times, my brain goes really fast. My brain moves fast. And so I'll make 10 leaps really quickly into a conclusion that makes perfect sense to me, you know? And I still do it. I mean, I really, my wife is like, how did you get there? And I'll recount the steps and she'll go, oh my God, you know?
So you're like stepwise or intuitive or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. I mean, it's just, you just make these, my brain moves fast. My brain moves really fast. Okay. I'm a big, I really think like our greatest strength is almost always our greatest weakness, right? Right. Almost always. Like, I'm super nice. I'm a very nice person and I can be taken advantage of, you know, but I'm very nice. And it, and there's a payoff to that, you know?
Totally.
And I my brain goes really fast. Like, I'm really good at getting to things fast. That's awesome sometimes, but it's terrible sometimes. I mean, it's just, you know, all of those things, you know?
So in that, you know, when your brain goes fast, sometimes you don't allow people to take the time to think through something. I had a coach that was coaching me while we were in one of our meetings, and, you know, somebody said, "Oh, what about this idea?" I was like, "No." And Carol said, "Craig, you need to explain. I know that you've already thought through all this stuff and you know what the answer is." Okay. So this is why, you know, and people need that. But on the flip side, if we don't have that, if we don't create that space, that time to do that, we can just run over people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing I'm hearing in what you're sharing, David, in all of this is how important as a person and as a leader, and I put them in that order intentionally, to work on yourself and work on your own awareness and work on something you snuck in there earlier. We didn't touch a lot about is paying attention to the impact you have on others.
Yeah.
Good impact and sometimes bad impact, and being willing to listen to that, which is something Craig and I talk about a lot here. I think it's one of the, if I was to look at one or two or three gaps in leadership, that's probably one of the biggest ones, the absence of that attention to impact.
Yeah. Well, and I think also, I am really good at reading sort of emotion and face. I'm fairly empathetic with people, and I can let that can have a negative toll as well, where I know something's negatively affecting somebody, but I know the right thing to do is to make it happen. And that's a real struggle for me. You know, if I see a look on your face when I'm telling you to do something, I go, what, you know, like, I see that you're not happy with this, like, talk to me about it, you know? And so that's good and bad, because sometimes you just need stuff to get done, you know?
So you've been, I want to go back to your people side. You've focused on building a business on values. And I'm just going to guess that part of the challenge in that is getting the right people. And I'm going to guess you made some great hires and you made some mistakes.
Boy, oh boy. So
what have you learned about getting the right people when it comes to a values-based business?
You know, it's hard. I talked about being kind. I'm very trusting too. One of the hardest things for me is believing what people say sometimes. People interview as their best selves, right? And they interview as we have a pretty strong statement into the world of who we are and what we are. And so people will say they are that when they come in because they want the job. And so they'll tell you what you want to hear. And then they get in and you go, oh my God, this person either doesn't understand what that means or they were lying to us, you know? And so, you know, and in advertising, you end up with some very big egos, you know? And so the joke that, I mean, it's a horrible joke, but the joke that I use with certain people, it's like, you know how Ted Bundy would get you into the Volkswagen and then you went, there's no door handles. Like, that has happened. That has happened to us, where like this charming person gets in and you're in the Volkswagen with them and you go, holy shit, there's no door handles, you know? We've made some doozies of a mistake. One thing I will say is the culture will reject an asshole pretty fast.
Yes.
You're just not allowed to be a prick at my
in the right culture. So in yours, it sounds like that would be obvious.
Yeah, you get rejected like a baboon heart, you know, and it's just not tolerated. And so people will get sort of called on it and then frozen out, you know, where they're not in meetings and they're like, why aren't I in meetings? And it's like, because you're an asshole, you know. They don't trust you. You're not accountable. You're not trusting.
Two choices.
And it's funny because the worst days of my career are all letting people go.
Yeah.
Some of the best days of my career are letting assholes go. Honestly, like, people go, wasn't it hard? I was like, it was so fucking easy to let that work. They were just wreaking havoc, you know, just wreaking havoc on the culture. So
at that point, David, I got to ask you this question. It's one I regularly ask companies that I'm talking to, is at Baldwin and how hard or easy is it to get fired there?
Pretty hard. It's pretty hard because we've had some people that it happened pretty easily, but for the most part, like if you're showing up and accountable and trying, like we'll work with you. Mm. Yeah. That's and awesome. We have this thing we call people first always. And so we always say, what's the people first always solution here before we go to a PIP, before we go to, you know, you're out of here. Like, what are we doing that's not supporting this person? What are we not doing that's creating problems? And then you sometimes get to the, you're like, we've done everything we can do. You know, we've done everything we can do. But I do want to feel like we've done everything we can do before we just pull the trigger on somebody. And particularly when you're in Raleigh, you know, you're getting people to come from big markets that they're really great people. And, you know, just because they don't fit in, it's not always their fault, you know, and they're used to working in weird, political, crazy environments. And so suddenly they get dropped into this thing. They don't trust anybody. And, you know, so I think it's hard to get fired unless you are doing something immoral. If you're doing something immoral, you're out really fast. And we've had that. We've had that a couple of times, and that gets solved quickly.
Let's talk about the performance improvement plan. You mentioned it, and it sounds like it's a bad thing. First of all,
I think it's a great thing.
Well, okay. So let's talk about in the case of poor performance, you have a performance improvement plan. How often do you see that actually helps?
Well, I would say it this way. We try to have a conversation before that.
Okay.
That is, we don't want to go to this, but here's what we need. And here's what we see you doing. And here's feedback from your people. And we want to approach this with love and support because we believe in you, you know, and we didn't hire anybody we didn't believe in, you know?
Yeah.
And so I find that the PIP normally, when you talk to HR people, like that's how do I fire people? You do put them on a PIP so you can fire them. Right. So that you can document their demise. Yeah. And I understand that completely from a protecting the company standpoint. But before you get there, I think you need to try to have done everything you can do. And then when you do the PIP, I think it needs to be done in earnest and honestly, that you really are hoping this person, you are hoping this person comes through and can change their thing. That's what you're hoping. You know,
so if you're really talking about growth, growing your people first always.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like everybody should have a PIP, you know, and it's not punitive.
Yeah.
It's progressive.
Interesting.
That we should all be trying to improve in some way. And so I've worked for an organization that had that, you know, basically we had these big flip chart things with our goals every month. That was our PIP. Everybody had that.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so the thing I wonder about that is that I'm a big believer in the power of words and that words mean things.
Yeah.
I think first thing we need to do is get rid of the idea that it's a performance plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because performance is, to me, I see, like, I love what you said, David, about we want people to be accountable and focus on outputs. Well, that's an element of performance, but it's who they are as a person that creates that.
Yeah.
And so often it's all about just this performance piece. So you don't have the whole person in mind.
Yeah.
And I that's why I was asking the question. I think that it sounds to me like the people that you work hard to keep are the ones that you can tell share your values.
Totally. Right? Totally.
But if they don't share your values, there's a short leash.
Yeah. And that's a very small amount of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, have you guys read The Art of Possibility by Ben Zander?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Highly recommend this book, but he has this concept called giving an A. And we did it at my last agency. And we've talked about it with employees before. And we actually just rolled it out through Take Your Seat. But the idea of giving an A is Ben Zander tells a story of when he was teaching at a conservatory. He's a conductor. And he's teaching these classes. And he said, in particular, there are students that you can tell that if they don't get an A, they're going to be in trouble, in such massive trouble with their families, with their culture, that they can't get an A. They get so anxious about it and so nerve-wracked, and all they're doing is thinking about, like, how do I get this A in order to, you know, it's about performative to get the grade. So what he does is he starts every class with, everyone has an A. Everyone's got an A. You've got an A. Now what I want you to do is come back and tell me why you got the A. Tell me why at the end of this semester you got the A. I want it now. And so these people would write their future. They basically write like, here's why I get an A. Like I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to believe in this. I'm going to do that. And he's like, great, you got an A. You know, now don't lose your A. So I think there's something really, really interesting about it. It's a little academic. So, you know, it's a hard, what's hard about that is putting that into some kind of HR approved, you know, system where, you know, because a lot of people actually can't say why they were going to get an A. But I think the idea of it is like, look, you're already succeeded. We wouldn't have hired you if you hadn't succeeded. One of the things I tell junior kids like that come out of school, we don't hire a lot of kids out of school. But I always go like, hey, listen, man, don't worry about being great right now. Just watch. Just watch what we do. Pick somebody who succeeds here and learn from them. See how they do stuff. We don't need you to hit a home run. If you do, it's going to be the most amazing coincidence and wonderful thing ever. But just learn. Just learn stuff, you know. Take the pressure of I have to be like the star in the first 6 months, you know, off of your plate. Like if you do that, that's great.
So clearly you're not hiring people out of school, out of business school.
Well, we don't hire a lot of people out of school anyway, but we hire some, but we're mostly senior people, which by the way, is an economic decision and a cultural decision that's been fantastic for us that a lot of my compatriots don't do. They go hire a ton of kids for nothing and they run them ragged. And then that cycles in and out every 3 years. And I'm not saying that's not a valid way to do business. It's just not how we've done business. Mm-hmm. We've hired senior people that we feel like you have a shorthand with senior people. You've got people who've seen everything. You know, they've seen the problems before. So, you know, that you're not having to explain the business to them. Like I really value that a lot.
Well, one thing I love about that you've got an A is it just turns everything on its head.
Right.
And so often I feel like that's what's really needed as the solution. What does it look like to turn it on its head? I think, as you were speaking, David, what I was thinking about is Seth Godin, who goes on many rants about education system. Mm. And one of his ideas was in college, he said on the first day, give everybody the final exam.
Yeah.
So they can learn it and they'll all ace it.
Yeah.
But then spend the whole time actually learning.
Yeah.
And exploring, because if isn't the goal for them to learn this, if that's the goal, then let them learn it.
Yeah. Right.
And then just have it be an experience of learning. And so many people resist that, say, well, wait a minute, we've got to have a way to measure people.
Yeah.
Why?
Right.
Like, why are we measuring people? Why are we comparing people? What's the point of that?
Yeah.
So I love that idea.
Yeah, especially when everyone learns differently. So,
yes.
So what I'm curious with someone like you, David, are you a what's next guy? Like, do you know what's next? You got Baldwin and you're helping to launch Take Your Seat. You've got the brewing company. Is there another what's next?
There's a couple of what's next. Yeah, but I can't talk about them. I'm meeting on Thursday on a what's next. But
you could kill me. You'd have to kill me, but I'm on Zoom and that's...
Yeah, no, know no one's listening to this. I can tell you. But I think one of the most feared sentences in my company is, hey, you know what would be cool? So I think whenever I say, everybody goes, oh no, you know? So
now is that because then they're going to be responsible for carrying it out? Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
of course. And it's like, okay, now we got to put some structure around this and try to figure it out. Yeah. But no, I'm kidding. I mean, but I do that a lot. And then sometimes nothing happens or something gets in the way, but I don't know. I don't even know if it's smart. I just go like, hey, you know, it'd be cool. Like, what if we did this? Like, that would be kind of neat, you know? And then we have people try to figure it out. I am not the best implementer in the world. I need people around me to implement. I'm much more of a, you know, what would be cool kind of guy. I mean, I can write the shit out of advertising, but I mean, that I can do, but everything else I'm not an implementer that way. So I need doers around me that can help make things real.
David, there's one other thing I want to highlight. You said this earlier. I say you kind of snuck it in and I want to make sure it wasn't missed. You said when you're looking at situations and problems, you actually ask as a group the question, what's the people first always solution?
Yeah.
And we've talked about this here a lot, that to me, that's what it means living your values. It's not that you can, in retrospect, say it happens to fit our values. Those are the questions you ask.
It's not a choice.
It's not a choice. What is that solution?
Right. I think it's Bill Birnbach who said, and I might be misquoting, or misattributing him, but a value is not a value until it costs you in the marketplace. And so that's how you know something's a value, is when a company goes, no, we don't do that. And I'll tell you, man, when I used to work on, we had the Burt's Bees account for 6 years. And one of the most rewarding experiences of my career, because the people over there weren't hidden around.
Yeah.
They're just all of them. Every single one of them was fantastic. And you would be in a conference room and they would be talking about packaging, and someone would go, well, you know what we could do, blah, 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 blah. And someone would go, that's not how Burt's Bees does it. We don't do it that way. That's how P&G might do it. I'm making it up. That's how these guys might do it. That's not what we do. And I always said, I would always walk out inspired, going like, they're having the conversations in the boardroom you thought they were having, that you want them to have. And they were, you know? And so, I always loved that. I just always loved that. So, and that's a wildly successful company. I think that
they've done great.
The big thing is that people think you can't succeed by doing these things. And my argument would be, that's how you succeed. Like, that is the way to succeed, is to it focuses your company. It focuses your people. It focuses your branding. It focuses your advertising. It focuses everything. And it's the one of the best definitions of positioning, the notion of marketing positioning, it's the essence of sacrifice. It's sacrificing what you're not. And getting more specific opens the world. It doesn't close it. Trying to be everything is actually the opposite. That's where you actually don't do anything.
I've told so many clients that.
Yeah. Love it, yes, David.
Absolutely.
This is so good. So rich. Just like I knew it would be. So appreciate your time and your ideas and your sharing, David. So we always want our guests to have a chance to highlight or promote something. What is that for you right now?
I think one of my favorite things I'm doing right now is I actually started a podcast. I started a podcast called Brands in Action. And and I'm talking to marketing people about all this stuff. Like, we're talking about our definition of a brand at the agency is that it's a set of behaviors based on values. And some of those behaviors are advertising and design. But what most companies don't understand is it's everything. Like, you can't just say we're about integrity and then go steal something over here. Like, you actually need to be about integrity everywhere, or else it's bullshit, right? Yeah. And so when we talk to clients, that's how we talk about their brand. Like, what kind of people do you hire? How do you distribute? How do you formulate? Like, all of those things need to be part of the brand experience. And if they're not, you need to make the brand that. Like, the brand needs to reflect what it is. And so I've had some really fantastic guests, and I'm just having a lot of fun doing it. And I've been meeting some just fantastic people. You know, I mean, that's one of the best things about this, as I'm sure you guys can attest. Oh, yeah. Meeting totally. Fun people. So that's one of my things we're doing. Take your seat. If you're a Black executive or somebody who wants to live in allyship to Black executives, please go to takeyourseat.co and sign up and join the community, because there's a lot of opportunities for everybody to help get involved and be a part of solutions. We're on a real mission with that company, and it's a very rewarding mission. So, then if you like beer and you live in the Triangle, Tennessee or South Carolina, look for Pony Source beer. It's darn fine beer.
Well, thank you for all that, David. David, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
You can send me an email at dbaldwin@baldwinand.com. That's the best way. I'm also, I'm on Instagram, David L. Baldwin on Instagram, which is all cocktails, by the way. I do all cocktail. I've got a drink. It's called Drinkstagram. So all I do is post cocktails on there. But those are the best ways.
And then I'll be following that immediately after the episode.
And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well. All right. If you like the cocktails, check out my Instagram.
Uh-huh. So David, we always wrap up with a couple questions. First one for you is, what's that? You've shared so much, so many wisdom bombs, what we call them. But what's that one piece of wisdom you want to offer leaders to close out?
I think the most important thing is everything we just talked about, and it's values. If you find your values and lead by your values, whatever those are, it will attract the people you want. It'll attract the business you want. It'll attract the organization you want. And I'm shocked at how people don't do it. And I'm really even more shocked when people do it, how great it is. It's just amazing. And I have so many examples in my life of people that are better at it than me that I pattern myself after, that I just love. I do want to say too, like, all of this is talking like I'm this amazing leader. I'm not great. I'm just always me. Like, so, you know, I don't want anyone walking from this going like, wow, what a great leader, you know? So that's what I would say.
And the other question for you is one of our favorite, David. Tell us about that movie scene or character that makes you think about great leadership.
I think the best movie on management ever done is 12 Angry Men.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you why. Good. Because it's not about being right. It's a guy, just watch that movie.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fiction, but it is so real and so applicable to life that you've got Gregory Peck in this jury room. Everybody thinks this kid's guilty, and all he does is ask questions. He just asks questions for 3 days, 2 days, whatever, however long it takes. He keeps asking questions until people kind of change their orientation around by going, huh? And suddenly he's changed the entire jury's mind to being that it's innocent, but he never says I'm right, you're wrong. He always considers, well, yeah, maybe, but what about this? What about this? He just asks questions the whole time. And it's just very, very powerful.
I love that. I love that movie. And I'm a question guy. And yeah, he helps them see things differently just by asking questions.
Gregory Peck was amazing anyway.
Incredible. Incredible.
Well, thank you for that, David. Thanks for all your time. And most important, thank you for the way that you are leading in your company and the things you're creating and with Take Your Seat. You're walking the talk. So you matter. You matter. And thank you for being courageous in that way.
It's nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cartavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.